Hello, and welcome to the AgTech So What podcast. Emerging technologies are rapidly changing the global agricultural industry, and we believe that this revolution is only getting started. But there's still too much hype out there and too big of a disconnect between ag and ag tech. So on this show, we try to bridge that gap. In each episode, we bring you the story of a different innovator in agriculture and try to find the place where ag and tech meet. I'm your host, Sarah Nolet. If you're a grower, if you're a researcher, government, great. Any big categories I missed? No, good. And my second survey question, and then I'll let you guys sit back and relax. I just want to get a sense from the room of where we sit on the kind of maturity around precision agriculture and kind of familiarity with this topic. So on a 1 to 3 scale, where 3 is I'm an expert, I'm using precision ag, I'm doing precision ag, I'm very involved in this world. Precision ag sort of broad term, but bear with me. 1 being really new to this world, really keen to learn what's going on and kind of get my head around it. 2 is somewhere in the middle. Make sense on the scale? So 1's new to this world learning. Great. 2's makes sense. Most people feel good with a 2. 3's experts. Great. So a good range. Hopefully that's helpful for you guys in kind of hearing where things sit. So I want to kick off as usual by having the panelists introduce themselves. We'll try to keep it to about 30 seconds each so we can get into the questions. We'll start at that in general.
Hi everyone, so I'm Jonah Williams. I work for the Airbus Group internationally, the oldest commercial satellite data provider in the world. And so a lot of people don't know, we've been operating the agriculture space across Europe for a very long time, and we've been recently bringing that out to places like Australia, where obviously agriculture is such an integral part of everyday life here. And that's what I've been mainly focusing on for the past 5 or 6 months, in a really deep dive into how we can utilize the infrastructure that Airbus has on a global scale to better make faster, smarter farms here in Australia work.
Great. Just before you go, Anastasia, I'm just going to have you guys make sure you hold the mic close to your mouth so that everyone can hear. Can you guys hear in the back okay? Great.
Is this good?
All right, walk you up, okay. My name is Anastasia Volkova, and I'm the CEO and co-founder of Florestat, and we deliver predictive agronomic analytics for commodity crops. Our product, Fluorescence, some of you have seen a demo downstairs. It's an interoperable engine that integrates with farm management solutions. So where you keep your records, we go there. We add all of the rest of the data that is like in there, weather, satellite imagery, soil maps, yield maps, and most importantly, modeling. So crop modeling to identify what is the potential of your crop and to demonstrate, whether you're a grower or an agronomist, what are the timely actions and recommendations that we produce would be such as fertilizer application, irrigation, spraying. We would tell you what, where, and how much. So if you were looking at adding fertilizer and you wanted to increase the yield, it would be one problem, and timing, whilst if you were increasing protein in your grain, it would be another one. Same, I guess, for cotton and yield. So yeah, that's Fluorescence.
On Fluorescence. So my name is Flavia Tatanardini. I'm the co-founder and CEO of an Australian startup called Fleet Space. At Fleet, we operate a constellation of small satellites called nanosatellites for Internet of Things. So the idea in various verticals, in which agriculture is one of them, to allow people to have private networks of things connected, so thousands of things connected in a farm, for example, using a technology called LoRa. So this allows farmers, you know, to deploy soil moisture sensors, weather stations, animal tracking, and all have a private network to the sky.
Hello, my name is Martin Clough. I'm based in Switzerland. I work for Syngenta, one of the world's leading crop protection and seeds providers. And my job is head of global product biology. So my job is really to make sure that our new innovation fits as closely with the needs of the farmer of the future as I can. I'm really interested in what farmers will be doing 5 to 10 years out from now. So I'm designing products to fit with the technologies that my panelists here are developing. It's very exciting for me.
Great.
My name is Will Wells. I'm the founder of Hummingbird Technologies, which I began in a data science lab at Imperial College 3 years ago in London. And happily, with the help of Google and Sir James Dyson and the European Space Agency, and now thousands of paying customers around the world, we've grown into become one of the best, I hope, remote sensing businesses for arable farmers around the world. Our focus is complex disease modeling, weed classification, yield prediction, and crop nutrition. We're very excited to be in Australia, and we want this to be our second biggest market by 2020.
Great. So we're going to go back over a few questions I had there, but just a bit of housekeeping. If you guys are standing in the back and you want to sit and aren't afraid of the front, there's a few seats up here. You're welcome to come up. It won't be disruptive. And the second one is this is an interactive session, so in the app there's a place to submit questions, and we're able to then pull them up on the screen. If you don't want to do that, then there's a microphone over there as well. I'll probably ask a few questions, and I imagine that you guys have lots of questions as well, so we'll have plenty of time for that. So I wanted to just, the way I think about this, and maybe it's helpful for some of the folks that were ones or twos in that survey, there's sort of collection, and there's analysis, and there's, you know, decision-making in a very simplified form, and obviously there's lots of other parts of the supply chain, but just in that framing, can you help the audience understand kind of exactly where you guys fit, so that, again, for the ones and twos in the audience, we can a little bit better get our heads around kind of how this space is working. So we might go in the reverse direction this time.
Analysis.
Integration with the customer in mind.
I think it's working. We are literally, it's not working. Wait. It's working. Oh, yeah, it's working. Okay. So, devices connectivity. So what Fleet enables, we enable you to buy a modem to connect thousands of things in your farm. All sort of things that you wanna connect. We don't build the things, we build the connectivity tools for you to connect a lot of things in your farm and have automated control of your farm.
We are in decision support, so collapsing tabs so that decisions can be made on recommendations straight away.
And we launch, we build, and take all the data from satellites all across the globe. And then with our latest product tips, we're actually delivering a base level of analytics that take away that first step and giving you accurate starting points to make in-field predictions.
So, Martin, I wanted to ask you, from a Syngenta perspective, as a business that's been in agriculture for a long time and really working in this space, what's your view on and why are you involved in working with these new companies, sort of startups and the digital space? How do you see the interactions between a larger company and quite small ones?
Okay, look, in my world, I'm inventing new crop protection products. We're coming under increasing pressure from things like resistance, regulation, political decision making as to what we can register, where we can register them. And also, our user base is becoming more diverse. So we have to develop specialist products for users who are working in different geographies, different crops, with different restrictions around them. In the future, their world is going to change also. They will have to deal with things like precision application equipment, digital support tools, satellite and drone-based platform imagery to help them decide how and when and where to apply our products. And so we're designing products that are specifically suited to them so that we get the best possible value out of our products for our customers, and that we minimize impact on the environment. So it needs to get exactly on the target, not miss the target, and make sure that we don't end up with products that may contaminate the environment or cause harm. So the sustainability piece is really important. To do all that, I need the technologies that these guys are bringing in terms of imagery, engineering, decision support, artificial intelligence, and machine learning.
Great. And maybe, hello, yes. Jonah, did you want to comment on kind of why, and then I'll have the startups give the other side, but why a company that's not traditionally been an agriculture player is now becoming active in the ag space?
So we actually are traditionally an agriculture player, just not here. So what we've been doing for the past 15 years is we're the almost go-to name in France for a product we have called Farmstar, where we worked with a local insurance and agronomy company to develop an incredibly detailed agronomic service for precision agriculture. But we can't replicate 15 years worth of R&D to get that product where we are today in every country. So what we're doing now is we're utilizing what we know best. We're not agronomers. We are not farmers. We're not any of those. But we do satellite imagery really well. We know how to use that satellite imagery really well, and we're delivering that baseline so that people like Anastasia can take that and go, right, I'm going to give you that yield prediction based on that data because I know that it's accurate, I know it tells me what I need to know, and I know I can rely on it day in, day out.
Great, and that starts to touch on some of the benefits for the growers and I think along the supply chain, which I want to come back to. But first, just for especially Anastasia and Will, but Flavia, I want to hear as well. This space is really crowded and there's lots of talk of IoT and of imagery and of sensors. And I want to get the kind of, not the product pitch or the company pitch on what you guys do, but how do you kind of see this space evolving? And what do you see your company's role in it as the space evolves? Is it consolidation? Is it partnerships? And where do you see yourselves playing? I might start with you, Will.
Yeah, so I think a few years ago, lots and lots of companies came to market disappointed with generic NDVI pretty picture products and have now either gone bust or have gone home with their tails between their legs. There's clear value to be had in complex solutions that involve machine learning and imagery analytics, using data from multiple sources, whether it's hyperspectral images on a drone or whether it's satellites or whether it's from robots. And you have to attack the value, the holy grail areas of agronomy that people are struggling with. So it's my T2 fungicide decision junction, and I don't know what product choice to use, I don't know what timing, and I don't know what rate. And it's those areas that you should focus on. In terms of integration, we love collaborating with everyone. We work very hard to build API connections to all existing leading software players because farmers hate logging into more than one system. And anyone that doesn't do that is also probably going to go bust, in our opinion.
Great. Flavia?
So when it comes to Internet of Things, you know, when I founded a company, I'm an entrepreneur. I founded a company with a vision, with a dream. That there is an Internet of Things dream that is just a buzzword, but the reality is, what can you actually do if we keep a farm with a lot of sensors? I mean, how can you change the way you work if 1,000 things in your farm are connected? If there are soil moisture sensors to tell you when you need to do your water management, if all your animals are tracked, if there are weather stations, if there are valves, if people are connected, if bees are connected. You know, one of our customers connect 80,000 beehives in California through space. It's awesome stuff. And, you know, and the farm has got 80,000 sensors each. The point is IoT and connecting all these sensors, it's always really hard because, I mean, who has got 3G? I mean, I'm Italian and I'm fleeting in Adelaide. And I saw a farm in Adelaide that's it's as big as Belgium, right? So, oh my God, right? You do need satellites because it's not 3G. But what I've learned in the past couple of years that, you know, I always say you need a village to raise an IoT deployment is really hard. You know, it's because at the end of the day, what is really important is the data. So you give a connectivity tool, but hell is hard work. But what the impact that we have seen, it's unbelievable. But you have to work with the right partners. I mean, I'm not with boots and hats in the field putting sensors. I've done it. You need to work with system integrators. I know four in the room that we work with. These are awesome people. They literally can create that gap. You know, you talk about that gap about people building technologies and actually farmers using it. The gap is huge. It's huge. It's still huge. So when you build a solution, and I was talking with someone before, you need to bring it into farm as fast as possible because they're going to hate it. So you need a lot of support to make it happen. It's a very good solution.
So some of you know that Floresat acquired ProductionWise last year. So it's a farm management software example. And you've also might have seen the recent announcement about the CRCP with AgWorld. So for us, the answer in the crowd space is actually, you might not hear word fluorescence as a farmer or as an agronomist. You might not. But for us, what is very important is that we bring the science out of CSIRO, out of labs of these universities, our own science, to where your data is. We're getting the imagery from obviously, companies like Airbus. We're getting IoT connectivity from companies like Fleet because we want that data to live somewhere where it can inform the decision making. And obviously, some areas are better covered by drones, some by planes, some by satellite, and all of it is flowing into one system. But what ultimately is important is that you want to know how to make the money on your farm. And you don't want to spend time looking at the dashboards. So for us, the crowded space answer was collaborate, collaborate, collaborate. And we have integrated farm management systems to do it. Now, IoT imagery obviously is there as well. It would be really interesting to take your questions later on to what you think about this crowded space.
Yeah, great. Thanks. I'm going to add something. So there's lots of talk about data, and it seems on the surface that data would be useful. I think there's also lots of talk around how data is not that useful without decisions, and we get lots of pretty pictures, and there's lots of complaints around lots of pretty pictures that aren't really doing anything to add value. I'm seeing some heads nod. So I want some comments, and Joni, maybe we'll start with you, around how do we move from great sensors, great technology, yes, it's hard, yes, service matters, but going from pretty pictures to actual decisions that kind of drive the bottom line.
Yeah, well, that's a hell of a question. You're absolutely right. Data in itself is integral. You can't do anything without the data, whether it be satellite, drone, whatever it is. It is a intensive part, and for a long time, especially in precision agriculture, it has always just been the pixels. You rely on the person who's buying it from you, from companies like myself, to deal with that. That's been their problem. But at the end of the day now, people want to make smarter decisions. They want to make it faster. They don't care about where the data came from. They just care that it works. So for us, and I guess for the industry to respond to this, we need to be able to say, well, how can we go and cut through all of that? Because it's still necessary. You still need that data in the background. You still need that backdrop behind it to give it its validity. But we need to figure out better ways, and we're constantly improving, to get through that faster, to get to that result. And I think that we've come so far in the past 5 years alone, 2 years alone even, in this space, that what is really fantastic now as far as a prediction will be old in 12 months. And it's accelerating at the rate that I think IT is doing, and it's incredible. It's incredibly a part of.
I think that's worth coming back to, kind of how fast this space is changing and how to stay up to date. But Martin, we have a question for you here from the audience.
Yeah, so this is a very interesting one. I would say probably half of my time at the moment is focusing exactly on this question. What we're trying to do is we are trying to get a view of who are going to be the winners and the losers in the precision application, precision agriculture data space in 5 to 10 years. And to make sure that the innovation that we're developing fits with that use. It takes us over 10 years to bring a new molecule from the first idea through to a product in the market. During that time, a lot of things can happen. So I need that 10-year foresight. What we're doing is we're actually doing field trials. My company does around 12,000 field trials per year. That's about $120 million of investment per year in field trials globally. That's a big global farm. And we're using some of the technologies that my panelists here are talking about to actually help us do our field trialing. So we're applying these technologies to examine the incidence of pests, disease, weeds, emergence, crop health, vigor, plant architecture in those trials, because we know that our customers in 5 to 10 years' time will be using exactly those same technologies to judge how our products are working, right? It's extremely important that we use these to be able to develop products that are precisely what the customer needs and going to be used in the way they're going to be in 5 to 10 years' time in terms of sustainability. So precision application might require products that have got different formulation characteristics. They may be applied through high-speed, machine vision-guided application. You can't afford to have volatility, splash, vapor, or anything like that. No cross-contamination. And those are the sorts of things that we're building into our products now and selecting compounds for that future.
Go ahead, yeah, comment, Bob.
Can I add, I mean, Hummingbird does a lot of work with life sciences businesses like Martin's. Ultimately, it's not just about how their business models need to adapt, it's also about how ours adapt to fit in with theirs, because these guys have balance sheets of 50 billion and we have something a lot less than that. And if we're producing weed classification maps at post-emergence to help with that herbicide application, and these guys have a herbicide product, and volumes are going to come down because regulatory requirements insist that they do, why not work together and target the areas that need the most chemistry so that you don't, so you're also tackling problems like resistance that we've mentioned there. There is a equal harmonious balance that can be achieved.
Can I just add something to that? Because one of the things we're grappling with at the moment is speed and scale. I mentioned we've got a global farming operation. That means that the data needs to be of the right quality. The metadata needs to be correct. We need to be collecting the right data globally and analyzing it and using it in a consistent way. That scalability isn't quite here yet, and the speed isn't either. Some of the technologies we're looking at around machine vision, AI, and so on, it requires a lot of time, a lot of computing power. Things get in the way, like weather. Clouds stop your drones gathering data. They're not much good for satellites either. And so the practicalities sometimes get in the way of the cool digital science.
Yeah, great. So I want to just invite anyone who does have a question, in addition to the app, if you want to get up, feel free to start asking them now if you want. We don't need to wait till the end. So you mentioned, Jonah, before value, and I wanted to ask about in this world where we have all this data being collected and analyzed, who pays for it, and how do we think about, you know, where the value is created, and who's actually paying for that? So is it somewhere in the channel? Is it on the input side? Is it at the collection side? You know, what does the kind of supply chain look like in terms of where the value is, and who's actually paying along the supply chain? I might start actually with Anastasia on this one. Put you on the spot before, Jonah.
Yeah, that was a bit unexpected. Okay, so who's paying the supply chain? That's a question that I think worries everybody who's a farmer here, right? Am I going to pay for this? Is my agronomist going to pay for this and charge me? Is the input company going to pay for this? So the way we're seeing, I'll actually dovetail this answer into Martin's, because, you know, companies like Syngenta, they're massive in this space. Companies that are producing nutrient, chemicals, spray, irrigation equipment are the companies that have most money in the space. And it's a necessary evil, how farmers call it, right? So there's no way we can do farming without those inputs. And it's a logical place for the most money to be made and most money to be paid. So in our vision of the supply chain, this is where agricultural technology needs to pay for itself, because what we found is that someone who is an agronomist or a farmer often comes across us using production-wise fluorescence, and what they want the agronomist to use it for is to be accountable for the product that they are taking from the shed to their farm, what they're selling to that farmer, what they're selling to individual growers. So we found that was a pretty good way of explaining, first of all, but also actually legitimizing the analytics, because the scientific model cannot tell you, depending on your balance sheet or depending on your opinion of the CEO of a big company, to use less or more chemical or nutrition on that farm. It'll just tell how much it needs. And this is where analytics, I think, is the future, because if those who are currently getting most of the money out of the system are going to pay for it for legitimizing their existings, it's, in a way, better for the grower and better for the whole supply chain.
Did you want to comment, Will?
I mean, this is quite a novel thought in this arena, but something we're seeing in the US which is very interesting, is profit sharing. Now, it takes years to develop machine learning-based solutions that can reliably and consistently give an ROI on farm. But for us, we did 30,000 flights on winter canopy management of canola in Europe last year, and we saw a pretty robust return on investment, to the point that we're now putting ourselves on the block saying, actually, we'll go 50-50 on any profits you share. So in that case, we're happy to pay for it. But the reality is it does take years to develop, and where the ROI is during the developmental cycle is very much up for debate.
I wanted to see if there's anyone in the audience on the producer side, on the grower side, who might have a comment. I know that this is a hot topic, and so I imagine some of you have opinions. Does anyone want to share a comment or question? No? Yes, please. Do you mind using, there's a mic just there. You might have to walk over, sorry.
I work for a sovereign wealth fund out of the Middle East, and I just think this is probably the moment I've been waiting for. So, Will, are you telling me that I can have agronomists in the future ground truthing and actually providing some sort of support in terms of what products, but the concept of having somebody pulled out because there's a meeting tomorrow and they'll look at the potatoes on Friday and get there and it's too late, will go?
Absolutely, William, and we hope to be doing it on all of your farms in the Ukraine this season.
Hi. Thank you very much.
I think that was a bit of a layup. great. So I think the value for the user is really where I wanted to go next. And I think it's about consumers too. You know, we talk about better, faster, smarter farms, and 100% has to be valuable for the farmer. But what are the benefits, even down the supply chain, of making these changes upstream? You want to start? Yeah, Flavia?
Can I, when I started my journey, I got fascinated about a story because I think bringing value is also about great stories. There was a farm in California, was probably 5 years ago, that decided it was a winery. And California has got a similar issue to Australia in terms of drought and heat and stuff like that. And they decided to equip their farm with a lot of sensors in one season to measure leaf content and water. Very similar problem to Australia, you know, when you go to a drought season, then there is a black market, so you just don't lose the money on your farm. On top of that, you have to pay for water. It's a very complicated process. And, you know, I come from South Australia where it's so hot and dry, and it's a big topic. So this California farm decided to equip the entire winery with IoT. And in 12 months, you know, while all the neighborhood was struggling with a massive heat wave and everything went totally downhill, these guys really triplicate, you know, their wine production, and it was the best year, and it was a massive story. They changed California. After that, California started the adoption of IoT with mistakes and errors and so forth, but very aggressively, and I loved it. There is the power of stories that can demonstrate value really, really fast, of, you know, people that start adopting technology fast. They demonstrate how they're saved, sometimes saved, you know. Last year in Australia, there was the big, and the opposite, you know, the cold. And U.S. had a similar story. An IoT equipped farm that went through an absolute, everything froze around it. They knew it in time because IoT. So there are some stories out there that can show the value very, very fast. We don't have to wait 20 years to understand if they've saved money or they've increased revenue per year. There are some dead, in farming, there are some events that can kill the production. And these events can be prevented with technologies. They can be prevented. So it's not a matter of what do you do, how well do you do if you do these technologies. It's how bad if you don't. And this is what I've learned in the past couple of years with the story I've seen. And this is why U.S. have equipped that most of the farms are IoT equipped, and they're going really fast. So don't underestimate that. There are some big issues that we still don't tackle.
Yes. Anastasia, did you want to comment? Yeah.
Yes. Just for producers and agronomists in the audience, we are interested in this vision of the data is your new oil, right? So I am really challenging each of you today to think how you're accessing that resource, how you're making sure that your farm is connected, that you're keeping records on your farm, that you will have a data set to look at, because this is where the more efficiency with less arable land will come. And we see the future in which that data is your commodity, and everybody who wants to sell something to producer, you will have that commodity to trade, not simply your land. You will have that data. And that is something that you should definitely consider, because that data can obviously be used against you, and you definitely don't want big multinational corporations to do anything bad with it unless you control it. So that's something that I wanted to add in terms of the value for the producer. Your value will be in your data. Connect the farms today, get those images, get those IoT sensors. You'll figure out how to farm better with the connected farm.
Great, thanks. Any questions from the audience? No? So, Martin, one from, there you go, that's for you, Will.
So this is, when can I see the cost of hyperspectral sensors reducing? I mean, we wish that it happened faster than it is. The reality is we'll be doing paid hyperspectral work, particularly looking at disease and spectral signatures of individual weeds or diseases at different growth stages. If you put that on a plane and you've got a big enough area, you can just about make it work on a sort of dollar per hectare basis. But it is still very much in the domain of the sort of work that Dr. Clough does, and that we, you know, we work on lots of those trials. I would say 18 months as an actual answer, but it's coming. So from our perspective, saddle up, develop the algorithms, use it to inform what you're doing now, because when it arrives, it's very exciting for the whole industry, because there's a lot more value that can be added.
Charles, you came up earlier and asked a question, and I'm not sure where you are in the audience, but you can look up the hyperspectral over crops in Australia now, today. It's accessible. It's something that Fluorsat provides, and specialty crops get it from us. We have produced science based on it, and it's something that I don't think a grower or an agronomist needs to have that sensor. We're obviously waiting for the satellites on the orbit to have it, so that we will all have it soon, Jenna. hopefully they'll place it in the orbit for us. But with those expensive data sources, I would say that science is out there, it's done, there are services available to you. It's definitely not something that's as cost effective as for, you know, dryland farming. But you're trying not to do green on green in dryland farming, you're trying to do weeds on fallow. So this is something that you can do with even simple NDVI pictures from, you know, very high resolution pictures from Airbus satellites. So yeah.
Did you have something to add, Martin? No. Okay, I thought you were going for it. So, Martin, you mentioned before kind of trying to pick winners and to figure out kind of who in this space to work with. And one of the other areas where it's interesting to think about picking winners is in the collection space. So, you know, drones adding value right now, are they going to be around in the future? Are we going to have crazy satellite resolution and that's going to rule the world? Are we still using fixed wing? How do you, and I'll start with you and Jonah, maybe ask you as well, how do you see the collection space evolving? And from a Syngenta perspective, you know, how much does that matter?
So at the moment, from an R&D perspective, we can only get the resolution that we need through a drone-based platform. Commercially, we can get the resolution we need through a satellite-based platform. It depends whether you're looking at field level or whether you're looking at plot level. I'm looking at plot level most of the time because I'm inventing new products. I think the technology either exists or will exist very soon to get the definition that we need from satellite platforms. Unfortunately, the best technology tends to be limited to the defense sector, which means that then there's the question of when it will become available outside the defense sector to agriculture. There's a longer-term vision that says that this sort of data will become very valuable to governments to protect food security. When we get up to that sort of level, then I think we have the leverage to get into the very highest level of resolution that we can get from a satellite imagery. When governments are actually supporting decisions on how to farm, when to farm, which crops to farm, and when to make decisions. Now, that's a long-term view. That may be 10, 20, 30 years out. You might think it's quite scary. It'll probably happen.
Interesting. Jonah, a similar different view?
I think from a data point of view, I mean, we've got a new constellation coming out in 2020 and then 2022, four new satellites. It'll be 30 centimeter. I know Digital Globe has got their Legion constellation coming out sometime soon. Planet is throwing up more birds than I can keep track of. You know, I mean, these are just three main providers that are throwing up a hell of a lot of birds. They're putting things in space to try and give more data. And I think we need to come back to the point of you have to have the right sensor for the right job. I mean, we have so much data getting flooded to farmers, producers, to agronomists, to everyone at the moment across the board from an analytical point of view that I think a lot of people are overwhelmed by, I'm just going to stick to what I know. I've used Landsat before. It's done enough. Okay, I'll stick with that. But there's so much data coming through that does resolution necessarily mean a better product? Do we have a variable rate applicator that can actually apply at 30 centimeter resolution? Okay, so in that case, how valuable is it spending $30 a square kilometer on 30 centimeter resolution, if that was the case, to get that? At the end of the day, you have to think, what is going to be best for the farmer? What is going to be best for when it comes down to what can they actually use? Yes, it looks really pretty, but it's about meaningful results from the data that you collect. So the sensors are important, and there's going to be a hell of a lot more coming, but it's about getting useful quantification from the data that's been provided.
If I could just add to that. So, Joni, you're absolutely right that the farmer can't actually apply at that level of resolution. However, many of the pests and diseases that we're looking at can only be detected at that level of resolution. And that is the problem. So the detection and the application are decoupled. So we've done quite a lot of work with industry leaders. We've worked with Blue River Technologies, Precision Hawk, Gamaya. We did some very good work with drone-based platforms last year. We even hung LiDAR sensors as well as hyperspectral and visual wavelength sensors under some of these drones last year to see what could we possibly get in terms of insight for very difficult to detect diseases. And all of these sensors still struggle. So you can detect things like Asian soybean rust, which defoliates your crop. You can detect late blight. But when it starts getting into trickier things, some of the cereal diseases, for example, you really do have to be very clever with your sensors.
Can I add something as well, very, very fast, that, you know, something I've seen in the IoT space that is different, just for everyone understanding. One thing is taking a photo from the top, right? This is what these guys are talking about. One thing is getting a data from a sensor in the soil. It's a different exercise, and you need both. You know, you do need both, but what I've learned in the past 2 years, probably expected, but when a farmer has a soil moisture sensor, they can see it. They control it. They know in what part of the area it is. They get the data. There are probably 25 quite trusted things. So yeah. They have got a tendency to deploy ground sensors much easily, and this is what we are seeing. The problem is that all the sensors on the ground, so not in the sky, on the ground, soil moisture sensors, leaf content, water, they're also different. You know, some of them, they give you so much data. Some of them, they just give you little data. So the point is what you want to do with them.
Just really quickly, because then we have a couple audience questions.
Really quickly, try and always remember the goalposts are moving. So we're working at integrating synthetic aperture radar satellites, which penetrate cloud cover. So that deletes a lot of the problems. Beyond visual line of sight, drone permissioning changes everything. Because you can have whole swarms of drones that don't need a pilot and can go and inspect and potentially even spot spray items. This technology exists and it works. It's just a matter of deregulation and cost.
Great, thanks. Yes, lots we could get into there. We will run out of time if we try, though. So a question from the audience.
Yeah. My name's David Campbell, known to some of the people in this room. I've been around Australian agriculture and agribusiness as well as globally over the last 40 years or so. I want to pick up on Martin's comment about security, and I agree that in future governments will certainly be using this to make some informed decisions about resource management. I want to, I guess, look at the other aspect of security. So it's about 25 years ago when I was in Pivot, we were the first organisation to do yield mapping in Australia and to take decision support systems out on farm with farmers. We had a lot of opportunity, and it's fantastic to see the technology here 20 to 25 years later. They were things we talked about then, but the enabling technology platforms just weren't there. What I think impacted what we were trying to do was what I'll call very destructive competition in the marketplace, where people compete for the farmer and compete for their information and their data, and any of us who've been through that commercially see how destructive that can be. I worked in Monsanto in the 80s. In the early 80s, we were offered Landsat imaging here in Melbourne to look at for the Australian crop market. And it was fantastic. There's only one problem. We didn't know how to use it. We didn't know how to read it. We didn't even have PCs on our desk. And I thought, wow, you know, wouldn't it be great to do that? 15 years later, I was in Cargill's headquarters in Wayzata, just outside Minnesota, Minneapolis and Minnesota. They showed me their global constellation of satellites and their system they use to monitor what goes on around the world, because it affects their agribusiness trading position.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to be rude, but can you ask the question?
I'm getting to the question, because here's some examples of what really happens out there. The Australian Wheat Board, by the way, developed something very similar, which became part of their intellectual property. And I guess that's back with Cargill now anyway, because they wound up buying the grain trading. What happens when we see the impact of destructive competition? Australia is a small country globally. What happens when people play nasty? What happens when your operations in the Ukraine decide they want to shut us out of our global market in Asia for wheat, which is starting to happen out of the Black Sea? What happens, and how do we overcome that happening as we develop the technology? It's not an easy question to answer, I know, but what do we have to think about? We just had our House of Reps in Canberra hacked this week. What are some of the things we have to take on board? I don't expect you to answer this question fully, though.
Good. But thank you. Thank you for the question, because data security, competition, and the quality of that competition is extremely important. Look, without competition, you won't have innovation. None of us will be sitting up here without competition. Competition is a really good thing. Respect for data, how you actually manage it, how you look after it, how you safeguard the owners of that those data, that is really important. I can't guarantee that data isn't going to get hacked, used, misused, or whatever. If I did, I'd be lying, because pretty much every industry does that and has had that happen to them. Everyone's been hacked and spammed in the audience, I imagine. What we need to make sure of, though, is that our data management platforms are as secure as they can be. Actually having high-quality data management platforms for what we're talking about is probably one of the trickiest things that we're facing at the moment. I don't have that in Syngenta globally. I don't know if anyone in the audience does have a really high-quality, secure data management platform. I wish there was someone sat on this panel who was able to talk about the quality and security of data management platforms. For me, that is a bit that is currently missing. But I take your point about the importance.
Is it more than just technology as well? Is it some sort of understanding between the participants and the players?
Sorry, I didn't get that.
So he said, was there something else beyond the technology? Something about, is there anything to do between the participants and the players?
In terms of ethics and morality, I know my company has a very high standard of ethics in what we do and how we do our business. I can't vouch for everybody. The world has got all sorts of companies with all sorts of players in it.
It's quite a complex question, because real machine learning requires large, high-quality data sets, right? So if you really want to crack disease in a certain crop, you've sort of got to get everyone together and to combine data sets, and then we've all done it. So you have multiple sort of ironies weaved into this sort of black box data privacy problem, and I don't think it's unique to this industry, but just to respond to your how do we defend Australia question, I think that all of us are trying to help growers here produce more for less and be more sustainable, and I think that encouraging that industry will go a long way into alleviating some of your concerns.
Great. So we're nearly out of time. Just we're gonna run out of time here. So I might just hold responses on that one. So in the last sort of 20, 30 seconds here, and there's so much we could have gotten into, and I apologize that we didn't get to dig as deep as I'm sure you all would like. But I want one sentence from each of you on an issue that lots of growers and others in this space face, which is how do I know what I should use and sort of where do I start? So it's very confusing. There's lots of stuff out there. Lots of things seem really similar. So if you're sitting in this audience wondering, you know, where do I get started on this space, what advice would you guys have?
There's no clear answer on what you should use because it's going to be different depending on what you're doing and how you want to do it. It's farming is still a very personal farmer-to-farmer differentiation. But ask us the question. Just talk to us about how you want to actually do things. Does it fit? Do you feel it fits? Try it. If it doesn't work, you can try something else. There's so many ways to go about it, but you'll find one that actually works and will end up saving you a lot of money, a lot of time, and probably give you better results.
That is a long sentence.
I would agree with Jono. Go and talk to everybody and work out how to do it, and data should be yours, and you should be moving it around. If you have started with one and it didn't work, move it to the other one.
If you're thinking to do into IoT and keep it farm or anything with sensors, just talk to me. There are five system integrators that can DJ and transform your company tomorrow that I will direct you to. That's a practical answer.
My advice would be buy the products from the person that really listens to you, really listens to you, because it's them that are going to be innovating on behalf of your needs in the future.
Be progressive, but ask for case studies.
Great. So thank you all so much. And before we thank the panelists, I just wanted to reflect one insight that I think is really important to tease out here kind of in summary is that this is a complicated, confusing, and rapidly evolving space. Lots to stay track of, to keep on track of. But this kind of comment of how do we think about it's a moving target and kind of skating where the puck is going. So different advice depending on where you sit on the spectrum. But it is a moving and evolving space. So if it's confusing, that's probably pretty true. And hopefully it shakes out. But you're not alone in that confusion. So please join me in thanking the panelists.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us on another episode of AgTech So What. You can stay up to date with the latest episodes and news at agtechsowhat.com. And as always, if you have any feedback or other guests to recommend, we'd love to hear from you. Just hop on the website and leave us a comment or send us a message. Finally, if you like what you're hearing, and we hope you do, please share the podcast with a friend or leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks again for listening. Catch you next time.